William Harlow never expected to become wealthy from toys. As a boy, he had imagined himself becoming an engineer, perhaps an architect, or some other respectable profession that involved careful calculations and practical results. Toys had entered his life almost accidentally. During his final year of college, he designed a simple mechanical puzzle for a local manufacturer looking to expand its product line. The puzzle sold well enough to attract some attention, and then attention became opportunity. One project led to another, and before long, he discovered that he possessed a talent for understanding how people interacted with objects. He knew how curiosity worked. He understood anticipation. More importantly, he understood disappointment and how to avoid it. Children could forgive almost anything except for boredom. By the time he reached his 40s, William had quietly established himself as one of the more successful toy designers in Connecticut, even if very few people recognized his name. The year was 1973. America remained caught between optimism and uncertainty. The country seemed obsessed with invention. New products appeared constantly. Advertisements promised a future filled with convenience, automation, endless possibility. Plastic gadgets crowded department store shelves. Electronics grew smaller each year. Newspapers regularly published stories about technological breakthroughs that promised to transform everyday life. William enjoyed reading those stories. He liked the notion that every problem, no matter how complicated, possessed a solution waiting to be discovered. It was a belief that had guided him throughout most of his life, and it had served him well. The house he shared with his wife sat at the end of a quiet road outside of Hartford. It was not large, but it was comfortable. The white paint had begun to fade in places, and one section of gutter above the garage needed repair, but neither of them considered such imperfections important. The home felt lived in. Books occupied nearly every room. Framed photographs lined the hallway walls. The furniture had been purchased gradually over 2 decades of marriage, which meant very little of it matched. Visitors occasionally joked that the house looked assembled rather than decorated. Eleanor always took that as a compliment. Most mornings began before sunrise. William would wake to the faint sounds of activity downstairs and follow the smell of fresh coffee into the kitchen. Eleanor was almost always awake before him. She would stand at the counter reading the newspaper while a half-finished cup of coffee cooled nearby. Her dark hair had begun showing hints of gray over the years, though she refused to do anything about it. Whenever friends suggested dyeing it, she dismissed the idea with some amusement. She claimed every gray hair represented proof that she had survived something, and she saw no reason to erase evidence of that victory. William often found himself studying her during these quiet mornings, not because she was exceptionally beautiful, though he certainly believed she was. Rather, he had reached an age where familiarity itself had become beautiful. He knew the exact shape of her smile. He knew how she tapped her fingers against a coffee mug while thinking. He knew that she always folded newspapers into increasingly bizarre shapes while reading them, transforming neat stacks of paper into wrinkled geometric disasters. These details would have seemed insignificant to strangers. To William, they were part of the architecture of daily life. They were the small constants that made a house feel like home. 21 years of marriage had replaced excitement with something far more durable. They no longer felt compelled to impress one another. Silences were comfortable. Conversations wandered without purpose. Entire evenings could pass with both of them reading separate books in the same room, neither speaking more than a handful of words. Yet the simple knowledge that the other person was present provided a sense of contentment neither had ever learned to explain. They had weathered financial difficulties, family disputes, disappointments, illnesses, and countless ordinary frustrations together. Somewhere along the way, they had become inseparable, in the manner of old trees whose roots had grown together beneath the soil. The accident occurred on a Thursday afternoon in October. Rain had been falling since late morning, coating roads in a reflective sheen that turned headlights into blurred streaks of color. Eleanor planned to visit her sister in New Haven and expected to return home before dinner. Before leaving, she reminded William that he still had not repaired the leaking gutter above the garage. He responded with the confidence of a man who had postponed the same task for nearly a month. Eleanor laughed, informed him that she no longer believed his promises regarding household repairs, and kissed him on the cheek before heading toward the driveway. William watched from the front window as she backed the car onto the road and disappeared around the corner. The moment felt so ordinary that he barely remembered it afterward. The human mind expects significant events to announce themselves. It assumes life-changing moments will arrive accompanied by warning signs. Most do not. When the telephone rang later that afternoon, William was seated at his drafting table working on a prototype toy dog. The design relied upon a spring-loaded mechanism that allowed the animal to perform a clumsy imitation of a backflip. He had spent nearly an hour trying to solve a balance problem when the call interrupted him. Annoyed, he sat down his tools and crossed the room. Rain tapped softly against the windows. Nothing about the moment felt unusual. The voice on the other end belonged to a state trooper. Years later, William would struggle to remember the conversation itself. He remembered individual words, but not the sentences that contained them. He remembered hearing the terms accident, highway, collision, deceased. He remembered staring at the wall while the officer spoke. Most vividly, he remembered noticing a small paint chip near the baseboard and becoming irrationally fixated on it. The mind behaves strangely when confronted with catastrophe. Faced with information too large to process, it often retreats toward trivial details. By the time the conversation ended, darkness had begun gathering outside the windows. William remained standing beside the telephone for a long time afterward. The house seemed unusually quiet. Somewhere in the distance, a clock continued to tick. Cars occasionally passed on the road beyond the property. The furnace still ran, the lights still worked, rain still fell. Yet an absence had entered the house, and William could already feel it spreading through every room. The days that followed disappeared into a fog of condolences and obligations. Relatives arrived, funeral arrangements were made, neighbors brought food, friends spoke kindly and often. William thanked them because politeness remained easier than honesty. The truth was that most of their words never reached him. Grief distorted everything. Conversations became muffled. Hours vanished unexpectedly. Entire afternoons passed without leaving memories behind. He moved through the process as though following instructions written for someone else. It was only after everyone left that the true weight of Eleanor's death began to settle over the house. Her coat remained hanging beside the front door. Her reading glasses rested on a table in the living room. A bookmark remained tucked halfway through a novel she would never finish. These objects transformed ordinary rooms into museums. Every corner of the house contained evidence that she had existed. Every discovery reminded William that she no longer did. One evening, several months after the funeral, he found himself standing alone in their bedroom holding one of Eleanor's sweaters. The fabric still carried the faintest trace of her perfume. It was little more than a ghost of a scent, fragile enough to disappear at any moment. William sat on the edge of the bed and pressed the sweater against his face. Outside, the winter winds rattled bare tree branches against the side of the house. The room grew darker as evening settled across the neighborhood. For the first time since receiving the phone call, he stopped trying to endure his grief and allowed himself to experience it fully. The tears came without restraint. Years of discipline and composure collapsed beneath a sorrow too large to contain. He cried until exhaustion replaced emotion and silence returned to the room. Long after midnight, he remained seated there in darkness, staring toward nothing in particular, while a single thought repeated itself again and again. Every invention began as a solution. Every machine existed to solve a problem. And somewhere deep within the wounded part of his mind, a terrible question had begun to take shape. What if death was simply another problem? The first version of the Willow occupied an entire corner of William's workshop, and looked nothing like a machine designed to grant wishes. Visitors would have mistaken it for an industrial prototype or an experimental generator. Three copper rings, nearly 6 feet in diameter, surrounded a steel platform mounted at the center of the room. Thick electrical cables connected the apparatus to a series of modified transformers, salvaged from manufacturing equipment. Shelves overflowed with notebooks documenting hundreds of failed tests. Every wall carried calculations written in pencil, many of which had crossed out and replaced multiple times. By the spring of 1975, the workshop had become less a place of work and more an archaeological record of obsession. The machine emerged gradually. No single breakthrough created it. William spent months identifying small effects and attempting to reproduce them. His earliest experiments focused on probability. He suspended dozens of pendulums from the workshop ceiling and monitored their movements for weeks. He rolled dice thousands of times and recorded every result. He built custom circuits designed to generate random outputs and then searched for methods of influencing these outputs through deliberate intention. Most experiments failed. Some produced results too inconsistent to trust. A handful generated statistical anomalies significant enough to demand further investigation. One such anomaly appeared during a series of coin toss trials. William designed a mechanical arm capable of flipping a coin with identical force each time. After several thousand attempts, the results remained perfectly ordinary. Then he introduced a new variable. Before activating the machine, he spent several minutes concentrating on a desired outcome. Tails. Nothing more complicated than that. The difference was small but measurable. The percentages shifted beyond expected margins of error. When he repeated the experiment over subsequent weeks, the effect persisted. The discovery itself was not remarkable enough to prove anything. What interested William was a secondary phenomenon occurring simultaneously. Every successful test generated brief electromagnetic disturbances throughout the workshop. Light bulbs flickered. Radio frequencies fluctuated. Instruments recorded momentary spikes that should not have existed. The stronger the statistical anomaly, the stronger the disturbance. By summer, he had abandoned probability studies altogether and begun investigating the disturbances directly. The work led him into increasingly unusual territory. Libraries supplied information that engineering journals could not. University archives contained obscure papers written by researchers whose careers had suffered from proposing theories most academics considered ridiculous. Several papers reference historical folklore involving crossroads, standing stones, and locations where reality appeared unusually susceptible to coincidence. Most scientists dismissed such material entirely. William, however, became fascinated by it. One recurring detail appeared in stories from multiple cultures. Ancient traditions often described physical objects capable of carrying intention. Charms, totems, small crafted items believed to strengthen a person's desires. The explanations varied, but the underlying concept remained surprisingly consistent. A wish attached to an object seemed more likely to manifest than a wish existing only in the mind. The idea sounded absurd. Nevertheless, William decided to test it. He carved a simple wooden figure from a block of pine. The carving resembled a crude human form no longer than his hand. He placed it inside the machine's central chamber and conducted a series of probability experiments identical to previous tests. The statistical deviations immediately increased. William repeated the experiment using different materials. Oak, maple, ash. Most produced negligible results. Willow did not. The difference was dramatic enough to convince him he had made an error. He recalibrated every instrument and repeated the process multiple times. The outcome remained unchanged. Objects carved from willow consistently amplified the effect. Whether the phenomenon resulted from the wood's physical properties or centuries of folklore attached to it, William could not determine. He only knew the machine performed better whenever Willow was involved. The discovery transformed the project. Over the following months, he experimented with increasingly elaborate carvings. Some resembled dolls, others resembled abstract figures. Each design was placed inside the machine and subjected to testing. William documented every result. Certain shapes appeared more effective than others. Rounded features produced greater consistency. Facial characteristics seemed to matter. Human subjects participating in controlled trials responded more strongly to figures that appeared friendly or familiar. The conclusion felt ridiculous when written on paper. People wished harder when the object seemed trustworthy. By autumn, William had settled on a design. The figure possessed oversized eyes, exaggerated features, and a cheerful smile. It looked harmless, approachable, the sort of toy a child might carry home from a store shelf. The prototype stood only 12 inches tall. William placed it inside the machine, and then he performed his most ambitious test yet. A ceramic coffee mug sat in the platform before him. The handle had broken years earlier and been repaired with glue. William positioned the Willow figure beside the mug and activated the machine. Copper rings began rotating. Electrical current surged through the apparatus. Instruments rattled against nearby tables. The air inside the workshop developed a strange metallic smell, similar to the atmosphere before a thunderstorm. For several seconds, nothing happened. And then the lights failed. Every bulb in the workshop exploded simultaneously. Darkness swallowed the room. William stood motionless until emergency lanterns activated along the walls. The mug remained on the platform. The crack was gone. The glaze extended across the ceramic surface without interruption. Laboratory analysis later revealed no evidence the damage had ever existed. The experiment marked the first undeniable success. Over the following weeks, William restored dozens of damaged objects. Broken watches emerged functional. Torn photographs became whole. Rusted tools appeared freshly manufactured. Every successful test increased his confidence. More importantly, each success generated identical side effects. The workshop temperature dropped several degrees. Electrical equipment malfunctioned. Animals refused to enter the building. A neighbor's dog began barking continuously whenever it passed the property. One afternoon, William discovered every bird had abandoned the trees surrounding the workshop. Hundreds of branches stood empty despite the season. The silence felt unnatural. No birdsong greeted the morning. No movement disturbed the leaves. The entire area seemed deserted. William recorded the observation in a notebook and continued to work. A few days later, he arrived to find frost covering the interior walls despite temperatures well above freezing. Ice-coated workbenches, thin crystalline patterns spread across windows. The machine sat at the center of the room, surrounded by a circle of frozen concrete. Again, he documented the phenomenon. Again, he continued to work. By then, the machine had already demonstrated capabilities no scientist would have believed possible. The side effects felt insignificant by comparison. Strange, certainly. Concerning, perhaps. Yet every warning sign appeared small when measured against what now seemed achievable. On the evening of November 14, 1976, William placed Eleanor's wedding ring on the platform and activated the Willow. Thank you. The gold band had been recovered from the accident scene several years earlier. Since the funeral, it had remained locked inside a desk drawer. For 6 uninterrupted hours, the machine operated around the ring. When the process finally ended, William removed the band and immediately noticed something unusual. The metal felt warm. Warm, like human skin. He set the ring aside and attempted to continue working. And then he heard footsteps. The sound came from the hallway connecting the workshop to the house. William turned toward the doorway. The corridor was empty, but the footsteps continued. For nearly 2 weeks after Eleanor's return, William experienced a level of happiness he had once believed impossible. The strange circumstances surrounding her reappearance faded quickly beneath the simple relief of having her home again. The house was alive. Conversation returned to the dinner table. The silence that had haunted every room since her death finally retreated. Miracles had always occupied a strange place in human thinking. People doubted them right up until the moment they desperately needed one. The abnormalities began so subtly that William barely noticed them at first. One morning, he found Eleanor standing in the backyard before sunrise. She was wearing only a thin nightgown despite the cold and appeared completely absorbed by the woods beyond the property. William watched from the kitchen window while preparing coffee. For nearly 40 minutes, she remained in the same position, staring toward the tree line without moving. When he finally stepped outside and asked what she was doing, she turned toward him with an expression of mild confusion and said she had simply been enjoying the morning air. The answer seemed reasonable enough, yet the image lingered with him throughout the day. There had been something unusual about her stillness. It reminded him less of a person admiring a view and more of a person listening for something very far away. Other incidents followed. Eleanor developed a habit of reading books upside down without appearing aware of it. On several occasions, William discovered novels resting inverted in her lap, while she calmly turned pages and continued to read. When he pointed it out, she looked genuinely perplexed and insisted the books had been positioned correctly. He assumed she was joking, but the possibility became more difficult to dismiss after the fourth or fifth occurrence. The behavior never seemed intentional. It carried the unsettling quality of someone who no longer perceived orientation the same way that other people did. The changes might have remained harmless if not for what happened one night in late February of 1977. William awoke shortly after 3 in the morning for reasons he could not immediately identify. The room remained dark except for a faint stripe of moonlight stretching across the floor from a gap in the curtains. For several seconds, he lay motionless beneath the blankets, listening to the familiar sounds of the house settling around him. Then he became aware that someone was standing beside the bed. At first, he assumed Eleanor had gotten up to use the bathroom. The thought lasted only an instant. The figure wasn't moving. William's eyes adjusted slowly to the darkness. Eleanor stood less than 2 feet from his side of the mattress. Her arms hung at her sides. Her face remained expressionless. Most disturbing of all was the direction of her gaze. She wasn't looking toward the window. She wasn't looking toward the floor. She was looking directly at him, watching him. William felt a pulse of cold fear move through his chest. Eleanor? His voice sounded weak and unfamiliar in the darkness. She did not answer him. The silence stretched between them. William pushed himself upright. As he did, Eleanor's head tilted slightly, as though she were observing an unfamiliar animal. Her eyes never left his face. Even in the darkness, he could see they were wide open. For several more seconds, she remained motionless. Then something seemed to change. Awareness returned to her expression. She blinked rapidly and glanced around the room as though waking from a dream. There was no trace of embarrassment in her voice, no indication that she understood how unusual the situation had been. She simply climbed back into bed and fell asleep almost immediately. William remained awake until sunrise. Over the following week, similar incidents continued. He would occasionally discover Eleanor standing alone in rooms she had no reason to enter. Once, he found her in the attic staring into a dark corner for nearly an hour. Another time, he discovered her in the basement with both hands pressed against the concrete wall. She claimed she had been looking for a misplaced box, though she seemed unable to explain why she had chosen that particular section of the basement to search. The animals noticed before anyone else. That same neighbor's dog began growling whenever Eleanor approached the fence separating their properties. Several times, William found dead squirrels scattered across the backyard. Their bodies showed no obvious injuries, yet each appeared unnaturally thin, as though something had drained the life from them. The local veterinarian suggested disease. William accepted the explanation publicly while privately wondering why the deaths had begun only after Eleanor's return. The moment that finally shattered his remaining confidence occurred during a dinner later that week. The evening progressed pleasantly enough. Conversation flowed, wine was poured, laughter occasionally drifted through the dining room. At one point, William produced an old photo album containing pictures from a lake vacation taken years earlier. Eleanor had been present for that trip. As she moved through the album, Eleanor's smile slowly disappeared. Her shoulders became rigid. She stopped contributing to the conversation. A long silence followed. Then Eleanor stood up and left the room. William followed her into the hallway and found her standing beside the front door. She appeared frightened. Her eyes remained fixed on the photographs visible through the dining room doorway. William asked her what was wrong. For several moments, she said nothing. When she finally spoke, her voice sounded distant. She told him that the woman in those pictures keeps looking at her. William felt his stomach drop. He turned toward the dining room. The photographs remained exactly where they had always been. When he looked back, Eleanor still seemed scared. "The woman in the pictures," she said. "She does not belong there." That night, after Eleanor fell asleep, William retrieved the photo album and carried it into the workshop. He examined every image beneath bright lamps, searching for damage or distortion. The photographs appeared normal. They showed vacations, birthdays, anniversaries, ordinary moments from a life that now felt increasingly fragile. Then he reached a photograph taken several years before the accident. The image showed Eleanor standing beside a lake in Vermont. William studied it for several seconds before realizing what had been bothering him. The woman in the photograph looked alive in a way that Eleanor no longer did. The difference was impossible to quantify. The smile was the same. The posture was the same. The face was identical. But the woman who lay beside him at night was not his wife. He knew that. The question to answer now was how to make her more alive. William studied the photograph for a long time without moving. The lake in Vermont was still in gray beneath an overcast sky, the surface broken only by faint ripples that suggested wind rather than weather. Eleanor stood near the shoreline with her hands loosely clasped in front of her, her expression caught in that familiar half-smile William had always associated with her when she was thinking but not yet speaking. Everything about the image should have felt ordinary. It was one of hundreds taken across their life together, Yet as he continued to look at it, something began to separate itself from memory. The woman in the photograph seemed anchored in a way the woman in his house was not. There was weight in the image, a sense of presence that resisted attention, rather than slipping away from it. The Eleanor who returned home had none of that. She occupied space, she moved, she spoke, but she did not feel contained by her own body. William lowered the photograph slowly and turned his attention toward the workshop, where the willow sat dormant at the center of the room. For the first time since Eleanor's return, he allowed himself to consider the possibility that the machine had not completed a restoration at all. It had simply performed an interpretation. Somewhere within its impossible structure, it had reached across whatever boundary it was connected to and retrieved something that approximated Eleanor, without understanding who she was and what she had been. The realization did not bring clarity. If the machine had produced a version of her that was incomplete, then perhaps the flaw could still be corrected. Perhaps what remained of Eleanor could be refined, adjusted, strengthened in the same way broken objects had once been restored. That night, William activated the willow once again. Eleanor had already gone to bed. In recent days, she had begun sleeping for long stretches without movement, her breathing so shallow at times that William found himself checking to ensure it continued at all. When she did awake, it was often without transition. On one occasion, she had opened her eyes and spoken in a voice so neutral and unaffected that William could not immediately recognize it as her own. She had asked him without curiosity or emotion why the house felt different at night. He had no answer that did not sound like confession. The machine filled the workshop with its familiar hum, and William placed a new object inside the chamber. A second photograph, this one taken after Eleanor's return. He adjusted the controls with a precision that had become obsessive, focusing not on restoration this time, but on enhancement, on the amplification of presence, on the correction of whatever subtle absence he had begun to perceive. He made his wish with careful articulation, not aloud, but through the same concentrated mechanism he had refined over years of experiments, directing intention into the system as though it were a measurable force. The reaction was immediate. The copper rings of the willow rotated faster than they ever had before, and the sound they produced shifted from mechanical vibration to something closer to strain, as though the machine itself were resisting the instruction it had been given. The lights in the workshop dimmed, not through failure, but through suppression, as if brightness itself had become negotiable. William felt pressure building behind his eyes again, familiar now in its implication, but sharper than before. The air grew cold enough that his breath became visible, and for a brief moment he believed he heard something moving inside the machine that was not part of his design. When the system finally shut down, the photograph remained unchanged. William stared at it in confusion, then frustration, and then a growing unease that settled into certainty. The experiment had failed in the only way that mattered. No correction had taken place. No refinement had occurred. Whatever Eleanor had become was not something the willow could improve. It could only retrieve variations of the same incomplete person. Behind him, the house creaked softly as Eleanor moved. He did not turn immediately. When he finally did, she was standing in the doorway of the workshop. She had not walked down the stairs. He had not heard her approach. Yet she was there, framed in the dim light spilling from the hallway. Her hair hung loosely around her face, and her nightgown was wrinkled in a way that suggested she had not been asleep for very long. Her eyes, however, were what stopped him completely. They were fixed on the machine with an intensity that did not belong to curiosity, but to something closer to attention. She stepped forward slowly, crossing into the workshop with the same measured movement William had seen in her before, except now it felt less like walking and more like positioning. She continued to look at the willow as though it were exerting a pull that she could not fully resist. When she finally moved, it was not toward him, but laterally, tracing a path around the machine that seemed guided by geometry. Her hand reached out once, brushing against one of the copper rings. William expected her to recoil from the heat or electricity, but there was no reaction at all. The contact appeared to mean nothing to her. That was when he understood that whatever had returned with her was not fragile in the way living things were fragile. It did not burn. It did not hesitate. It did not interpret pain or danger in recognizable terms. It simply occupied her shape. William turned off the machine. The silence that followed felt heavier than the sound that had preceded it. In the days that came after, Eleanor began to change in ways that could no longer be mistaken for subtlety. She stopped sleeping entirely, though she continued lying in bed each night with her eyes closed, imitating rest. When William checked on her, he sometimes found her awake beneath the covers, staring upward as though tracking something that moved across the ceiling. On one occasion, he awoke to find her standing at the foot of the bed again, watching him with the same unmoving attention he had first seen that night. When he spoke her name, she tilted her head slightly, considering whether the sound applied to her. The final breaking point came during a winter storm when William discovered that every mirror in the house had been turned toward a wall. When he corrected their position, he found Eleanor standing behind him in each reflection, though she was not physically present in the room. In one mirror, she appeared closer than in the other. In a third, she stood with her mouth slightly open, as though mid-sentence. William left the house before sunrise the next morning and did not return until nightfall. When he did, Eleanor was waiting by the front door with her coat already on.
Beware.
They drove for several hours without speaking, leaving the city behind and continuing west until the roads narrowed into unfamiliar stretches of forest and open land. Eventually, William stopped the car on a dirt road that cut through a barren field far from any visible settlement. The sky was overcast and the wind moved across the landscape in long, uninterrupted currents. Eleanor stepped out first, walking a short distance into the field before stopping. She did not look back when William closed the door behind him. For a long time, neither of them moved. Then William spoke quietly, though whether he was speaking to her or to himself was no longer clear. He did not attempt another correction. He did not make another wish. He simply left her there, standing in the middle of the empty landscape, and drove away without checking the mirror. Years passed before anyone heard William Harlow's name again. By then, the one-wish willows had appeared in small quantities on the edges of the collectibles market, always without explanation. They were sold in modest packaging at a single craft store that specialized in handmade curiosities and imported oddities. Each figure was carved from pale wood, smiling with exaggerated friendliness, and accompanied by a simple instruction card that promised only one thing if treated correctly and with sincere intent. William never advertised them. He never explained them. He only delivered them in small boxes, leaving them on the shop counter before disappearing back into the quiet anonymity of ordinary life. Most customers assume they're nothing more than artistic trinkets. Some claimed otherwise. But by the time anyone thought to ask where they had come from, William Harlow had already learned that explanations were no longer something that the world was willing to accept. Only consequences remained, carefully packaged, smiling faintly from shelves that looked no different from any other toy in the store.